Everybody ready? Tellement bien. So Sierra's going to tell you about meditation. Meditation means cultivating good qualities of mind, kusala mind, encouraging them, cultivating them, allowing them to be, to flourish in the mind. So you want to use objects, use the things that we come in contact with as the basis upon which to develop the good qualities of mind, such as the basic five, the five indriyas, sati, samadhi,
uriya,
sadda, panya. I'm sorry, I'm really rusty now. So, everybody understand the Pali words, or do I have to go through them in English? Anybody need it in English? No, you need it in English. So the five qualities being awareness, stability of mind, concentration, faith,
effort,
and right effort.
And wisdom.
Wisdom. Sorry, I missed something there. Or added something there. So what we're practicing here is Satipatthana. It's called the four foundations of mindfulness. And so the practice is based on mindfulness. And there are four foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness based on the body, mindfulness based on feelings, mindfulness based on the mind, mindfulness based on
nature,
everything. Now, these four foundations, the body, the feelings, the mind, and nature, meaning everything, they are what we would consider objects. So there's the object and there's mindfulness. Because you will be mindful of something. The something you are aware of, that you are mindful of, is the object. So you could be aware of, I'm just elaborating here, of body, mind, feelings, or anything else. Yep. But Sierra is more interested in the mindfulness, not in the object. Yes? So what he wants to emphasize and discuss with you more is the mindfulness itself, the mind that is mindfulness. Because the work of meditation is purely the work of the mind itself. It is, the meditation is not done by those objects that you're observing. In Pali there is a phrase, he said it, I won't repeat it. And it says that bhavana's meditation, is the work of the mind itself. So you must know that in meditation, two parts come together. The objects or your experience, i.e. the things that you are aware of, and the awareness itself, yourself being aware. So these two come together for meditation. Very generally speaking, everybody has only six objects because there are six sense doors. The sense doors are your eyes, sight, smell, sound, touch, taste, and then mind itself, like thoughts and so on. So when we use the six objects and use them to build sati, samadhi, and panya, that is awareness, stability of mind, and ultimately wisdom in the mind. So you use those six objects to build awareness, concentration, and wisdom, that is called meditation. And it's very important for the meditating mind, that is your awareness or the mindfulness, to be a wholesome mindfulness or a wholesome awareness, one with wisdom. If any defilement is part of the mindfulness, then right meditation doesn't happen. So it's important not to to be sort of wanting something, not to be desiring something from the practice, not to develop aversions towards objects in your practice. And when you don't know what to do when you're experiencing something in your practice, that's when right practice isn't quite happening. So that's basically greed, aversion, and delusion. And the most common failing for all of us as meditators is greed in meditation. And what happens when we have greed in our meditation, i.e. we wanting to try and get something from our meditation or in our meditation, we use a lot of energy. So in all three cases, when we are wanting something from our practice, we start using a lot of energy. When we are aversive to something in the practice, we also start using a lot of energy. When we don't know what to do, we suddenly start using a lot of energy. So Siado wants to say, you don't need to use a lot of energy. Just to know what's happening to yourself doesn't require a lot of energy. Just to recognize what's happening to yourself. So he wants you to do a trial run right now. Do you know that you're seeing? Can you recognize that you're seeing? Yes? And when he didn't say, do you recognize that you're seeing? You were seeing, but did you realize that seeing was happening? That it was part of your experience? So when we wake up in the morning, first thing we do is open our eyes and we see, but we never really realize that seeing is happening. So when you recognized that you were seeing, how much energy did it take you to recognize that you're seeing? Nothing. Tiny little bit. So that's what Siaro is trying to demonstrate about awareness. It's just this recognition of the experiences at your senses. Yes?
Mindfulness meditation, mindfulness of deep mindfulness of
So he feels that a lot of times in practicing mindfulness meditation, in practicing mindfulness, people misunderstand mindfulness. They think they have to use a lot of effort to pay attention to something. So this is just an example, yeah, to show how to recognize that your seeing doesn't require a lot of energy. So when you recognize that you're seeing, or you recognize that you're hearing, or you recognize something on your skin, recognize what you taste. So these are just examples, but in a very general way, all you're doing is becoming conscious of yourself. Like you're sitting, you're aware of that. What else have you become conscious of in yourself suddenly?
Hearing?
No. Breathing?
Yes. And then?
There's always stuff coming, right?
Temperature? Feeling, right?
All the touching sensations? Movement, feelings? So he just wants to say there's a lot of things that you might be aware of, be conscious of in yourself. So you don't have to focus on one thing only for a long, long time. So whether you have become conscious of something physical in your body, whether you have become conscious of something you're feeling, something that's bothering you or making you feel good, whatever you become conscious of, when you're conscious, that's when you're meditating.
Oh, physical process.
So regardless of whether you're aware of a physical process going on or a mental process going on, what he's interested in is that you know that something is going on, that you're conscious of yourself.
So mindfulness meditation, so the awareness, mindfulness of digata.
So the cornerstone of mindfulness meditation is the mindfulness itself, that you are aware, conscious.
So bhāditiya, the kuloma ditiyari nyāsi,
when you use your energy to focus on one thing all the time, sometimes you tend to miss the rest of the show that's going on in your body and your mind. You might neglect to notice something else that might be significant because you're too focused on something else. Initially, you won't be aware of a lot of things because the mindfulness is not expanded. It's not much, you know, built up. You haven't got this habit of constantly being aware. So initially, you'll just be aware of some limited things, one or two at a time. But as the awareness develops, as you continue to remain conscious, he calls it that the awareness becomes sharp. But actually what happens is that the awareness seems to expand and seems to receive a lot more, much more easily. You become conscious of many things naturally. So the cultivation of meditation means the cultivation of that quality of mind, the mindfulness. So the yogi's duties or the yogi's part to play in the mindfulness process, and he says there's three. This is new to me. So first, the yogi attempts to have the right view. That's his part to play in when he's being, when he or she is trying to be mindful. To have the right view, to have mindfulness or consciousness, and to retain that consciousness or mindfulness, to persist in remaining so. Three, right view, consciousness, persistence. So you may remain aware of one object for some time. You may become aware of a couple of objects for some time. The objects may change. It may become more or less. It doesn't matter. What's important is you're conscious. Yes? So what you need to just check with yourself is whether you are conscious, you are aware, and whether you're having the right view or the right attitude.
So, right view about your lesson.
So what is this right view or right attitude? Siara says the right view or the right attitude is to accept everything or anything that you experience, whether it's a loud sound or an itch or a pleasant sensation or happiness, as part of nature. All this is natural. If you feel angry, it's natural. Just to observe, to be conscious, this is what's happening now. So everything that you experience, everything that you're hit with, remind yourself that this is just how things are. Yes, this is the object. This is what is being known. So you're not going to identify the experience with something or somebody. It's not somebody making a loud sound or something that made you smile. It's just what's happening right now in the mind. The mind has experienced this. When it's hot, it's hot. When it's cold, it's cold. It's not I'm hot, I'm cold. It's not a person or a thing. It's just an experience. When we don't inject this right view once in a while, our natural inclination is to identify with the experience. It's my experience. It's happening to me. I am this.
So
And when this view, this identification with an experience, I am disturbed, I am happy, comes in, that's when the defilements follow close. Quickly. But if you're able to inject some of this right view into the experience, if you're able to, initially, sometimes you might just have to try to think to see whether you can take this view. He says, when you're able to successfully actually see that view, you will find that the defilements don't follow. Yes?
Mm.
So when you're able to take what is happening naturally as something that is happening as it is, for example, it's hot, but you're able to just see that this is an experience. This is what is being experienced now. He says then feelings of aversion or of needing to get away from the heat or make yourself more comfortable, all that may not follow.
Accepting, yes? Yeah.
You may be able to accept that this is an experience and stay with the experience to observe it.
Nature,
be with it.
Dhamma
is nature. Everything in nature, everything that happens naturally is Dhamma. Dhamma is everything, everywhere.
So we're
trying to actually see what it is for what it is, for exactly what it is, and not embellish it with our opinions and judgments and ideas. For example, when it's painful, do we like pain? No. That's because we have decided that pain is not good. But pain is a natural phenomenon. When there's body, there will be discomfort. It's not a problem. It's just a manifestation of nature. But when we think it's a problem, there should not be pain. When we have this idea, then every time pain comes up, we will make it a problem. So when we think differently, when we can think of things as being natural, as being what they are supposed to be, then we don't react towards what is happening as it is. We don't react towards it with attraction or aversion. So when we are practicing the Dhamma, this right view, it can become very, very important, because when right view is not there, then we just find ourselves reacting and not growing. But if we're able to see things with right view, we're able to cultivate the mindfulness and carry on. So here, in the development of samadhi, in this retreat, he says, we're not going to develop samadhi by focusing on something to calm the mind down. We're going to develop samadhi by trying to inject right view. And because of right view, the mind does not react, and therefore it retains its stability, and that is samadhi.
Yes?
And slowly, this samadhi will start working together with the continuity of your awareness. This stability will build as you continue to be aware. So the practice of Dharma happens all the time, everywhere. As long as you're conscious, which means you're awake, from the moment you wake up till you fall asleep, every moment is to practice the Dharma. It's not very difficult, he says. I mean, you're sitting, you know, right? Is it difficult to just know that? Or just to recognize that you're walking? Just that. What's important is is sustaining it. Sustaining that consciousness.
So
if you sustain that consciousness, he says in the beginning, you may just have a very simple awareness, walking. Nothing specific, just this consciousness of being in motion. He says, when you sustain that consciousness, you'll find, after a while, specific things start to become, to come into your consciousness. You start to become of a little sound here, a little feeling there. Small things become more and more conscious.
Action, movement.
Allow it to... Everything starts to come in little by little. Allow it to just enter naturally into your consciousness. All you need to maintain is that your mind remains with you. Yes. If tuwa kone ka thasro tu yi de tuwa tuwa twing sait ka kone ma shi raw lo tin naw. So I just explained that, you know, I think we all naturally think that when we start drifting off into our thoughts, that we're not with ourselves anymore. But if you are conscious that you're thinking, he says you're still with yourself. So we're not trying to make the mind still to the point that it's not thinking. That's not what he means by samadhi. Yeah, we're not trying to still the mind in that way. What you're trying to do is to be conscious, not still. So that your goal is to be conscious, to be awake, aware, whatever it might be. So if you're walking, you might just be conscious of your whole form, walking, moving. It doesn't have to be concentrated on the sole of your foot or the tip of your head or something like that. You don't have to choose what you want to be specifically aware of. So then we come to the objective. Why are we trying to be mindful? What is our goal? Is it because we are in retreat? Or because Tiado says you must? Why do you want to be mindful? Why do you want to become conscious of yourself?
Less painful.
For a moment, he thought you're talking about sitting pain. Then he realized you're talking about suffering. Yes, so he got it.
Yes. No,
anybody else have any idea why they are
more peaceful?
More awake. Yes.
Aware of what's going on.
Pa phin ni le ti aw lo.
Yes.
Tu a po no cha le.
Adika yue che ga na le che.
Yes. And the whole point of all this is so that we can understand.
So this mindfulness meditation is a learning process.
Because mindfulness is a learning process. In the process of being mindful and conscious of ourselves, we learn things about ourselves. When we understand something, really, he says that's when the mind is like an epiphany. The mind suddenly understands, and then it becomes free of what was encumbering it. And that's what the ultimate goal is. So the being awake, the being peaceful, all that leads to sometimes an awakening, an understanding, awakening of understanding, which then leads to more peace. So peace itself is not the goal, because then when you cannot achieve peace by doing meditation, you don't know what to do. But when the goal is to understand, then you can try to understand the suffering too. So when you are just peaceful, Don't think you've reached the end of your journey, because there is still more to understand. So, and when we are very peaceful, we get coddled, and sometimes it just becomes moha. We just sort of bliss out. We indulge in it. Yeah, because that's our goal, just peace. Then we indulge in it, wallow in it, love it, stick with it, get attached to it. Okay. Yes.
Cranky when it's not there.
Yes, get cranky when it's not there, most importantly.
So
if we're not understanding, if understanding is not growing, he says then we have to use our wisdom. Work it. Yeah? Wake it up. Crank it. So to develop wisdom, he often says this, he says it's like money. If you want to make more money, you have to invest money. So to make more wisdom, you have to invest wisdom.
So
the goal of mindfulness is to develop wisdom, understanding. Whether it's a happy experience or an unhappy experience, if we know how, if we allow the mind to explore, something can be understood from everything, eventually. So rather than focusing and making, you know, other peripheral experiences the goal of your meditation, he says what he wants is for you to practice your mindfulness together with your innate wisdom to develop more. He says simple things like interest, we may not recognize it, that's why he's telling you this. When you're conscious of something in your experience and you become really interested in it, he says, when there is interest, actually wisdom, your own wisdom is already at work. Interest is a characteristic of wisdom. So he says, when we're generally conscious and, you know, things are coming into our mind, they seem to come and go and come and go, don't think it's a waste of time. He says the mind is collecting data so that at some point in the future, understanding can arise when all the data comes together and makes sense. When the mind has collected enough data that it can investigate this, you know, the whatever comes through the stream of consciousness, and it's able to get a full picture, that's when understanding arises. So don't, he means to not underestimate the value of everything you are conscious of, even though it may not make sense right away. He says when we become interested in something, then that's when we start to look at it in more detail, and then that's when we discover more about it, and then naturally the mind begins to understand more, and that will happen naturally. So when you're being aware of yourself, he says there's not much else except yourself, your physical and your mental. Yeah? But it's only when you make the effort to be aware as much as possible of yourself that you begin to notice more about yourself that you can learn and understand from. So any time is Dharma time. He says, don't forget yourself, even in the toilet. So don't allow your mind, I mean, it might do it by itself, But don't consciously allow your mind to not be aware. So it's not only on the sitting cushion that you're supposed to be really aware. So regardless of what you're doing, whether you're taking a shower or eating or looking at something or somebody or thinking, please be conscious of yourself. Be aware.
Now the cool tap your I see and looking inside.
And he would like you to be conscious of the fact that you see and look. Do you all know how to practice meditation with your eyes open? Yes. Just being aware. Seattle wants you to be able to bring the practice of Dharma into life, so that life is the becomes the practice of the Dharma. So he mentions being aware of when you're seeing and looking, because that's something that's very much part of our life, even daily. So that's how you can, that's one of the ways you can bring the Dharma into life, is to be aware that you're seeing, then you're meditating with your eyes open. So as you live life, you should be practicing Dharma. So Dharma and life must not be separated. So Dharma must be a part of our life. Otherwise, when Dharma is not present, then the defilements are present in our life. There are yogis who have practiced years and feel that they have not changed, maybe not matured, haven't been able to give up some things or something like that. And he says, why? He says, because they don't integrate Dharma into their life. They don't try to be aware when they are living their normal lives outside of retreat. So, just as we make the effort to practice the Dharma in a retreat, he says, if we don't try to do the same, although to a lesser degree, the effort, you know, when we're back home, he says, then, you know, the Dharma and the defilements are always in a tug of war, so, yeah. So you can try practicing sitting meditation with your eyes open too. Seeing can be one of the objects of meditating.
Very obvious.
It's a very obvious object. Seeing is happening. Sight. Can you choose to not see when your eyes are open? But you can choose to be conscious of it. So the recognition that seeing is happening might come back again and again. And that's all you need to do. So it's not so much to be interested in what you're seeing, the person, the floor, this, you know, but the fact of sight is what you're interested in. We all know how to be aware of hearing, right? Seems easier. Why have we never noticed seeing? So he says, if we're not proficient or at all being aware of all our sense doors, then we can't really say we're proficient in meditation completely.
So
Some of his yogis have said to him, when they meditate, then after their sitting session, they're afraid to open their eyes. And he's like, why? He said, because other than my samadhi is gone when I open my eyes. So then he says, that's not really good samadhi. It's not strong. It's not stable. If just the opening of your eyes makes the stability of the mind go away, then it's not very stable, that samadhi. So whether we are seeing or walking or eating, taking a shower or sitting, samadhi must always be there. What is the cause of samadhi? What causes samadhi to be there?
Right view.
It's right view and continuity of awareness or persistence or sustaining your awareness and having the right view naturally makes the mind stable.
Meditation is the cultivation of the quality of the mind.
So, as he mentioned earlier, meditation is cultivation of the good qualities of mind and things like stability of mind, consciousness. So, every time we see or look, instead of having aversion arise, instead consciousness arises, right view arises, stability of mind arises. When we hear something, instead of having greed or aversion or delusion towards it, we have consciousness. We have So he says, when a person has experiences at all six sense doors and uses these experiences to develop consciousness, stability of mind, awareness, wisdom, and so on, he says, you call that person a meditator or a Dharma person. The difference between a person who practices the Dharma and a person who doesn't practice the Dharma, he says the six sense doors are exactly the same. The difference is the mind, the consciousness, and the understanding. So a person who does not practice Dharma will have experiences at the six sense doors and then react to it with aversion, greed, and delusion. But if a person practices Dharma, then they will, using the objects of the six sense doors, they will develop consciousness, understanding, wisdom, stability of mind, all the good qualities of mind, instead of aversion, delusion, and greed. But the six sense doors are all the same for everybody. So only the mind differs. The point of view of the mind differs. If the person has the right understanding, has the right view, has some knowledge from somewhere, then they will regard the six sense doors differently and develop.
So knowledge also
So when he says wisdom, like a person, when he says wisdom, there's three kinds of wisdom, yeah? There is things that we hear, borrowed knowledge, borrowed wisdom, yes? Things that we hear, read about, like Seattle's talking to you now, what you read in books. That's borrowed wisdom. Then there is your own, your innate wisdom, where you think about something and then you think of it logically in your own mind. That's your innate wisdom. And then there is developed wisdom. When you use this, you're conscious, you're mindful, and you learn something more. You see a point of view that you did not see before. That's developed wisdom.
Right information, right knowledge.
Mm. So when we get the right information, borrowed wisdom, but if we get the right information, it can also help us to develop more wisdom in the other two. So the more information we have, and the more right information we have, he says that allows the mind to use that to develop more wisdom. Yes, in meditation, he says, when we go for retreats, we mostly listen to Dharma talks from the teachers and all that, and then we use that in our practice. So that's how we're using wisdom to develop more wisdom. So when we have the right information, he says we can think of things in the right way, then we can practice in the right way and do the right things. So when we have some information that allows us to see things in a more wholesome way, see it from a different point of view so that we don't get aversive or attracted to things or attached to things, then he says that's how we, you know, develop our wisdom and grow. He says, so as you practice and, you know, you hear this sort of information, then you make the attempt to inject right view, you begin to realize that when you see something or hear something, there is just hearing, there is just seeing, this is just an experience. He says, someone who has not heard of this will just think, I've heard, I've seen. It's a different point of view, a different idea. To see something from the Dharma point of view, that this is nature, this is what is happening, or to see it from the normal worldly point of view, that this is happening to me, this is my experience, or the
yeah.
So in meditation, he says, this view is very important, because the view, the lenses through which we face an experience, he says, then determines the subsequent reactions that the mind will have or responses that the mind will have. Have you all heard of the word right attitude, wrong, wise attention? Doesn't make sense. Right, wise attention, what does that mean? I know. Yeah. So there's in Pali yoniso manasikara and ayoniso manasikara. So when you have ayoniso manasikara, it's when the mind pays attention to something through the wrong lens. You look at it from the wrong point of view. Say somebody opens the door and it's noisy and you think, why is that person making noise? Wrong view. If it's just there is a sound, I'm conscious of it, right view. Okay? So that's the ayoniso and the yoniso manasikara. So the literal translation is taking it to heart in the right way or taking it to heart in the wrong way. So when you take it to heart in the right way, it leads to the subsequent minds are kusala, wholesome states of mind. If you take it to heart in the wrong way, the subsequent minds are akusala, unwholesome minds. Yes? So if you're experiencing pain and then the attitude can be, oh, this is an experience, this is happening naturally, you might not feel so aversive, you might not feel so painful. But if it's, I'm in so much pain, then the painfulness, the aversion is stronger. He says, when there's pain, for example, in the leg, and when the pain goes away, does the leg disappear as well? So why do we say there is pain in the leg? Or the leg is painful. So leg is painful. Then if painful is gone, then leg must also be gone, right? Because leg is painful. So he's saying the leg is the leg and the pain is the pain. They're different. They're separate. Pain is a natural phenomenon. If you sit in a position for a long time without moving, pain will come. But is that a problem?
Natural process.
It is just a natural process. If you don't want to experience pain, just make yourself comfortable. But if you want to understand pain and the experience of pain, the experience of how the mind reacts to pain or how the mind creates more pain for itself, then don't make yourself comfortable. Take the time to observe what's happening in your mind and your body. So now it's time to study then. So for as long as you can tolerate the pain, you might want to then learn from it. You see when the pain is there, what does the mind think? And how does that thinking make the mind feel? How do they affect each other? And when these change, how does it affect the experience of pain? So it becomes an experiment. So you can investigate that if you have the opportunity. When there is a little bit of pain, how does the mind feel about it? What does the mind think about it? And then when the pain starts increasing, how does the mind think about it? How does the mind's attitude change towards it? And then again, it just, as it changes, you want to see how the mind changes with it. So you want to see how a change in the thinking and state of mind affects your experience of the physical. Because it's a different lens. So that's why meditation is very interesting, he says, because you're learning about yourself. You want to know more about yourself. He says, if we truly want to have happiness, he says, happiness does not become completely ours when there's no true understanding. It becomes something that is incidental. It's coincidence, you know. Sometimes we get to be happy and sometimes we don't, but we don't have full control of it. But when you truly understand, then you're in control of that. So when you investigate the way your mind works, the functions of the mind itself. So this is what you'll do, hopefully not just here all day, but when you go home. He says, but here you have the opportunity to then speak with him mornings and evenings. There is schedule up in the dining hall to ask him questions about your own practice or to tell him about it.
About meditation.
Anybody have any questions now? Yes? Will this practice lead to the fulfillment of the Eightfold Path? Di ato mua megen shipa yao malare. Yes.
Right view, right view, and right thoughts.
Right. So there's right view and right thought. He's spoken about that. Then there's about fulfillment of the eighth factor. What does he mean by the eighth factor? Samasamadi. Oh, tamatamadi. Diha atolo tamatamadi pimala. Are you talking about jhana? This is the practice of vipassana. So you may or may not develop a jhana, but no. Zang zanga ho ne ban yao po lo la re. Yeah, samadhi is necessary for enlightenment, but not jhana. Sama samadhi tua zanga tama tamadhi lo tua tena.
Yeah, parabe tamadhi le par tamadhi si le san le tamadhi tu nga pyo la san lo
tua jhana. Jhana is a state that is sama samadhi, but jhana is not the only state that is sama samadhi.
Tamadhi o tila o tamadhi o penya o tohu pao ma lai de ya.
Enlightenment is achieved when the whole Eightfold Path is working together.
Sila samadhi panya tongku.
Sila samadhi panya.
Nova ifupama.
Yeah.
Paramana kuwa penya.
Jhana is not necessary for enlightenment.
Only sumia.
Tuala.
Jhana only there enlightenment.
Yeah. But jhana alone is not sufficient for enlightenment either.
Yeah.
So you know the Noble Eightfold. Yes. 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 Yeah. Ero zanga ho neban yao po. Oh, atong cha lu ya re kriya. Da bi me zam mapa le neban yao ya. Yes. Yes. It is not a necessary tool. It is a possible tool. Yes. Any questions about
awareness of upsala states? When states of mind arise which are vast or
mental,
and you're aware of them,
yes. How to be aware of that?
Yes. Is also mindfulness.
Yes.
But mother you know my mindfulness and number. Right view you tell.
So first right view, then mindfulness. So first to know that the defilement is not mine. The defilement is an object in the mind. Yes, it is a state, a thought that has arisen in the mind, to recognize it as that. And then you can observe it. This is a thought that is happening in the mind. Yeah? Once we take it as my defilement, or I am having this akusala mind, the wrong view is in, we will resist it.
Increase.
Yeah. So there's the defilement increases because there's the defilement being experienced and the defilement is, you know, which is in the mindfulness. So you must, I won't say must, the attitude that you want to bring towards the experience is that this is an object. This is being known. Now, mindfulness is conscious of this experience. That's how you want to.
Mm.
So, before mindfulness, must come right view. Right view is more important than mindfulness itself. It's like people who have depression, they keep thinking about how depressed I am, and that makes them more and more depressed. Yeah, the Buddha said, he said, when a mind with greed arises, know that a mind with greed has arisen. Not, he didn't say, know that I am greedy or know that I am feeling greedy. He didn't say that. Because when there's right view, you can accept that this is present and this is the experience. Because you're looking at it in the right way, then you can allow yourself to observe it, to be conscious of it, and not fight with it. Because these defilements that arise, we are not invoking them. We're not purposely inviting them. They happen naturally in the mind. They are an occurrence of the mind. There are conditions present in the mind that make these thoughts and feelings arise. So that's the natural phenomena. Conditions giving rise to effects. You can just observe it. He says experiences that arise of their own, you know, as part of how the mind is. He says, it's got nothing to do with you. Yeah. You're not in control of everything that happens. So what you need to have, what you can try to have, is right view towards that experience, or all experiences. Everything that we experience in the present moment is simply an effect of everything, of some things that we have done in the past. They're just effects of causes already manifested. So you can't stop it. Yeah. But you can't change the past, you can change the present. You have some borrowed wisdom now, you can use your own innate wisdom to think about it and change your view towards it consciously so that you can accept and just be aware of it. So in the present moment, what you're able to do then with the effect is, instead of allowing it to overwhelm you, instead of allowing this present experience to become a negative experience for yourself, you can see it correctly, observe it, and it will come and it will pass away in its own time. And it will not snowball because you're not feeding it anymore with the wrong view. So in the present moment, you use the right view and you pay attention to it. Because of the right awareness, then the defilement doesn't grow. Yes.
When you were speaking before about meditating with eyes open,
yes.
My usual habit is on retreat is to meditate with eyes closed.
Yes.
And to move past them. But I'd like to ask Sayadaw, are you suggesting that we meditate with eyes open? And if so, could he say more about that?
Could he say more about that?
Is he suggesting you do that? And B,
to a Karang Sui. Dima Uziya. Myesi phwen bi ro bae athauk khain na la san chi je na bro ai chaung nen ne pu pyo ba le so siado it's just a suggestion siado's not saying that you must meditate with your eyes open. He's saying you might want to try it sometimes just so that your experience or your practice in meditation encompasses all six doors more completely. And he's going to elaborate. He says, when... So, say you're in a session, you're sitting with your eyes closed, and you have you've developed quite good samadhi, it's feeling quite good. Try opening your eyes at that time. Don't stay attached to your closed eye, bliss. Open your eyes and see, because the samadhi is there, see what that samadhi will allow your mind to be able to do with your eyes open, how much awareness can be brought to it. So you experience for yourself, with your eyes closed, there is that much awareness. And when you open your eyes, can that much awareness still be present? And when you have your eyes open, he says, then you can, if you can then practice to see how to develop awareness with your eyes open, how much can happen, how much can you develop it, and so on. Thinking and seeing are very similar in nature. When we think, we easily get involved in our thoughts. We identify with them and we are thinking. Because of two things. Habit. It's our habit to think we are thinking and be thinking. And the second thing is identification. I am thinking, so... The storyline. And we also become interested in what we are thinking about.
So,
we're interested in the concepts.
Yeah.
It's the same with seeing. When we see, when we have our eyes open, immediately our attention is with the concepts outside, and it's the habit of the mind to take that as the object and be out there rather than be aware of seeing, just as we are not aware of thinking. So just as in the practice of being aware of thinking, you have to make yourself conscious that you're thinking. You have to remind yourself again and again, oh, thinking is happening, thinking is happening, until you're able to then view thinking objectively and not become the thinker. In the same way, if you apply it to seeing, when you keep reminding yourself that seeing is happening, you're stepping away from it a little bit, seeing is happening, you stop getting... becoming just the seer. So he always tells beginners, in the beginning, don't watch your thoughts continuously, because we will get swept away, we'll get sucked into the thoughts. But recognize to yourself that there's thought.
Yeah?
A thought has arisen, thinking is happening. Make a note of it. This is happening, and then come back to being conscious of yourself in another way, rather than of the thought. So you have to go back and forth, being aware of thinking, coming back to yourself, being aware of thinking, coming back to yourself, to not get lost in thought initially. So you can do with seeing. You can try just opening your eyes briefly and then closing it again. And then being aware and then opening it again and then being aware to become conscious of seeing. There is seeing and there is not seeing. Both objects. When the eyes are open, the mind tends to be slightly more awake because there's one more sense consciousness. And so when there's one more sense consciousness, there's one more object. Merci, mei.
To him.
When we have our eyes closed, it's easy for the mind to think, to get lost in thought, easy for the mind to get sleepy, and easy for the mind to conjure up images in the mind. Yeah. So you can try both, experiment with them, choose whatever gives you better mindfulness in any given time.
Yeah?
What is always more important is the quality of the mind. So then you learn, whether you have your eyes open or closed, you learn to choose to be in states that are more wholesome for your own mind. In daily life, we don't have the luxury to remain with our eyes closed for long periods of time, except when we sleep, right? So if we make it a practice to be conscious of seeing, then in daily life, because our eyes are always open, he says, then this consciousness can often come back to us, making us more aware during the day. Is seeing and looking the same?
Looking, hearing, and
listening.
You know, looking and listening and pay attention to do it.
So, looking, listening, and paying attention is the same
function.
Same kind of mind, the same sort of movement of mind. There's an active. So only the sense door is different, but the movement of the mind is the same. It's an active attention. So when the mind pays attention through the mind through the eye door, it's looking. When it pays attention through the ear door, it's listening. When it pays attention through the mind door, it's paying attention. So you can also be conscious of that movement of mind. The mind is listening now. The mind is looking now. The mind is paying attention. So when you look, can you not also become conscious that the mind is doing that? That's not difficult either, right? Seeing is passive. Looking is active. You can notice the difference.
Be conscious of it.
But without looking, we always see, so long as our eyes are open. Without listening, we still hear. So similarly, without paying too much attention, we can remain conscious. And he does want you to check throughout the day whether you're getting tense or whether you are relaxed. He wants you to notice this. Any tension is an indication that you're developing some defilement. You're either wanting something or disliking something, or you're feeling confused about something.
Fear,
anxiety, any kind of defilement brings tension to the mind. So check often. And then when you see tension, if you do see tension, he said, check both the mind and the body. You will notice there's tension not only in the mind, then there will be translated tension in the body, different parts of the body. If you consciously relax those tensions, it's also a kind of meditation.
Right.
So you're going to be practicing all day long, so please don't do anything that makes you tired or stressed out. Don't stress yourself out with meditation. He says, he says we need to be interested in meditation, we want to meditate. Not that it's something fearful to approach, not that it's something difficult, and it's that you have, you know, some exam to pass. There's nothing like that. No, no bells. There are no bells on this retreat. But he says, when there are bells on a retreat, what does the ringing of the bell bring to mind? How do you feel when the bell rings? Do you feel, oh, yay, you know, let's go and sit? Or do you feel like, oh, I have to walk now, or sit now, or eat now? He says, meditation should be a source of joy. We should find it interesting, joyful, an exploration, fun.
Meditation must be like this. Okay.
Tabela.
Okay,
so Seattle will see group A this evening. Yes, at 6:30, the first group. There's Bhante. The 6:30 sessions start this evening, so if you all want to come this evening, you're welcome to come as well. Yeah. I have two announcements for the retreat manager. One is that we need yogis to volunteer for yogi jobs. There are some jobs still available. Please sign up. The second one is for those who don't have the books that have been written for Siador, please come to the office after this. I'll be giving out the books. We're giving out one book each to every yogi only. If you already have a copy of the book, please don't take any more. Please don't take any more because there's not enough. If you want to make a donation towards the printing of the books, Nolia will send the donation to Malaysia to the printers. Seattle says, because we mentioned yogi jobs, to remember that the yogi job is also a source of practice. Thank you. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.